Welcome to Temple Love Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Carl Callaman, who is the author of several books. Today we're going to be discussing The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, The Quantum Evolution of Consciousness. Dr. Callaman has a very good theory about how civilizations and consciousness evolve that I think has a lot of accuracy and will really help us understand how mind or the universal mind helps form our not only our individual consciousness, but also our civilizations and collective consciousness. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Callaman.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Kolb. I should mention that, yeah, it was a great introduction. It really captures exactly what is the topic of that book. I should say, though, it's relevant that in 2 weeks from now, I'm coming out with a new book, which is called The Nine Waves of Creation. And I'm sure we will just be touching on subjects
sure.
that are being explored.
I would love to have you back on, you know, once that book's available, too, so we can do that book as well.
Yes. So,
this book was written in 2011, the one we're doing today. Is that right?
Yeah. I started writing it in 2011. I think it was probably written over 2 years.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about your background and then how you became interested in, I guess, explaining the ideas that we're talking about, that consciousness and the global mind and civilizations are interrelated.
Yeah. Well, I was born and raised in Stockholm in Sweden, and I started out in the hard sciences. I worked as a chemist in a laboratory that focused on different toxic substances in the environment and these kind of
mm-hmm.
things. And so probably 20 years total, I spent doing that kind of research, and the 10 last of those years were at the University of Washington in Seattle, and I've
mm-hmm.
lectured in many different universities around the world. But it came a point when I, in 1979, which was when I was still a graduate student, and I was, I felt called to and did a trip, like a backpacking trip to
mm-hmm.
Mexico and Guatemala. And
mm-hmm.
That really became a very life-changing event. I came out of that feeling that there was a purpose to my life, and
right.
that particular purpose was linked to what I had found was to be the Mayan calendar. And
mm-hmm.
the whole Mayan calendar, the whole Native American background just called me very much. And now going from having that kind of insight and that feeling, oh, wow, you know, life has a purpose, or at least for me, it has a particular purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while until you actually get to know or actually manifest what that is in any kind of concrete way. So, of course, I went back and continued my work in toxicology and
mm-hmm.
and as a scientist, but there came a breaking point, I would say, in 1993, when I decided to leave that career and go into exploring the Mayan calendar. And today, though, in the books that have come out in this year, The Global Mind and the Nine Ways of Creation that is just about to come out, I'm sort of, you know, the real Maya buff will not really find that kind of a background in those books, because they have basically the same kind of things have been translated into language which is more linked to quantum physics, to consciousness research, and and yet it's always there. The Mayan calendar is always there as some kind of a basic skeleton upon which I draw conclusions about in a bigger perspective. But the language has changed. It's much more sort of modern language in trying to understand what is happening in the world. But I've sort of taken this calendar that's still in being used, and it has been used for a couple of thousand years in the mountains of Guatemala and southern Mexico, and I'm still using it, but it's about our own time very much, and but also trying to connect this on a much larger scale to how the universe is designed, and to understand that I have had to learn a lot from the ancient peoples and especially the Maya as to how it's actually designed.
Well, let's go back and give a little bit of information about the Mayan calendar. So on the back of your book, it says that the Mayan sixth wave, by long count, began in 3115 BCE, which would be 3,000 years before Christ, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And then it ended on, what, December, was it 21st, 2012?
It doesn't, there are two points I'd like to make. First of all, I have a slight difference. I said that it would end actually in October of 2011.
That's right. I remember you saying that before. So it was actually in October that it ended, right?
Yeah.
But it was 2012.
In 2011.
Oh, 2011, sorry.
Yeah, okay. Now, that's a slight difference, but it means a lot in our own time. It may not have been very important earlier, but now it does matter. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it didn't really end. I mean, these are the Mayan calendar describes waveforms.
Right.
And those waves, it's like a light wave or a sound wave, or especially light wave. They don't end really, and the same thing is here. But it was
undulate.
exactly. They undulate or oscillate, but it was a very significant shift. I mean, like a waveform, it has peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. And there was a shift between those that created a new world, you might say, a new mentality in the world, I should say, for worse.
Let's go back and talk about the kind of change that you're suggesting occurred at the beginning of the Mayan sixth wave, which would be about 3,000 years before Christ. You have some very specific things that you say occurred then, as we really do have some archaeological information and information about the civilizations then. We may not have them from 100,000 years ago, but we have them from then.
Exactly, yes. Well, this so-called long count is a central calendar among the ancient Maya, and so every time that they built a pyramid or anything happened in their history, they would make some kind of an inscription that would place that event in the context of this long count.
Right,
and so that tells us something. It's because they looked upon this as like a divine wave or a divine calendar, and anything that's part of that wave then will have some kind of a connection to its origin and to the divine origin of the universe. And so this particular wave then, which proceeded in 13 steps until our own time, it started, if you want to be very exact, 3,115 BC. But you know, just roughly speaking, you might say it's 5,000 years ago or 5,100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I first came to Mexico, and I mentioned that as a backpacker in 1979, I would ask the tour guides or the archaeologists at these pyramid sites, you know, why did they start the calendar then? And they would say, you know, it was just a made-up date. They didn't take it seriously. Because if you start taking it seriously and look at what actually happened in the world at that particular time, then it becomes such a big shift in worldview that it was something they couldn't really entertain. So I had to, not only I, other people I think were before me in pointing out that, you know, the beginning of this particular wave it coincides with what we call the rites of civilization, not among the Maya, but in other parts of the world, because this is a global wave. It's a global calendar.
That's important to understand, right?
Yeah, it's very important to understand. So 5,100 years ago, you know, that's sort of, if you go to some really mainstream archaeological source, say Encyclopedia Britannica or something like that, they will place the first dynasty, the first pharaoh, or the first dynasty of Egypt at about that time. That's the time when Egypt becomes a unified civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Upper and lower Egypt is unified. And that's about the same time then that the other main civilizations in Mesopotamia, in current-day Iraq, and in the Indus Valley in India, that they also appear and they also develop systems of writing. They start to have
mathematics.
One thing after another. And so it really is a very natural question to ask. How come this coincides with the beginning of the Mayan long count? And I should also ask that, should also add to this that in the Hindu system or the Vedic system, what you want to call it, that in the ancient way of looking at the yogas, their long time cycles of time, they also have a beginning of what they call the Kali Yoga in 3102 BC, which is like 10 years after. I mean, it's just complete, very, very, very narrow time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So they, both of those civilizations that by all accounts didn't really have any contact with each other in ancient times, but nonetheless they have, as I would say, they had downloaded some kind of a cosmic information, placing the beginning of a new mentality, the mentality that creates civilization, to pretty much exactly the same time. And what is also so striking about this time is the fact that these changes, you know, they, as I say, that they happened, we most know about the ones in Egypt, Mesopotamia, and the Indus Valley, but it's the same time that that in the British Isles they start to build these megalithic Stonehenge and Avebury and Newgrange in Ireland, and you, at the same time, you also have people building pyramids in a large number of places in the world, like Peru is from, it's almost like 5,000 years ago that they have dated the first pyramid. And they have pyramids in Mongolia from about 5,000 years ago. So, it then becomes apparent that this idea of building pyramids, putting huge efforts into creating some kind of construction, was taken up in many different cultures and civilizations at the same time. We don't really have any pyramids that have been verified and so forth before this time. But this particular time becomes like a starting point for an activity that had not existed before and then endures for a couple of thousand years in different parts of the world. But here, the world is somehow, you might say, and this is the conclusion I've drawn, is that people must have undergone some kind of a global change in their minds. Their minds that have, on a global scale, must have been altered so that they all got the same idea. Okay, let's start building cities and pyramids and so forth at that particular time. And that's what I'm, you know, that is really the starting point for this particular book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. And it's really, you know, for any discussion of the Mayan calendar, it has to be verified that whatever changes happens in the consciousness of people, that it's also being manifested in the outer world, so that we see that this is a real phenomenon. These waves actually exist and somehow influence human beings in such a way that it actually drives and directs the kind of civilizations that we have been creating.
So, excuse me. What else was in the consciousness that you have observed at the beginning of the Mayan sixth wave long count? What other things? I know you've done some comparisons of the hemisphere, let's say east versus west, being similar to the right and left side of the brain. You know, comparison globally to what we have in our own minds.
Yeah, it's what happened on the mental level at that particular time. That's really the key thing to understand, I think, because how the civilizations turned out, how the social relationships were in those different civilizations is essentially a function of this new global mind that people became able to download at this particular point in time. And what I think is really the most important thing here is to see that what people downloaded was a mind of separation, and it was a mind of discernment, and it was a mind of separating yin and yang, if you like, light and darkness. And it's not as simple as to say that this is a good thing or this is a bad thing, but it's the separating mind that people downloaded, it had all the all the advantages of you know, in order to create a technological civilization, you really do have to have that kind of a discerning, separating mind that distinguishes by between all things. On the other hand, the fact that people downloaded a mind that gave them a yin-yang polarity, a polarized mind, a mind of duality, it led them to create societies that were very much distinguished on the basis of gender, on the basis of social classes. People started to fight wars because they started to perceive the distinction between their own nation and other nations and so forth. And this is really a mental change that came into people in those particular days. So if your mind is dominated by a polarity between light and darkness, what happens is that you start to project that separation onto the world. It's like,
right,
as inside, so outside. And it means that you, when you're dominated by that kind of duality, you will think it's natural that the world is separate, that there is a big divide between the rulers and the ruled, between men and women, between your own nation and the other nations, and so forth. And so this kind of yin-yang duality is something that the origin of this is something that I also discovered was present in many of these early civilizations. It's almost that like they were aware of the kind of change that their minds would undergo. And it was a very dramatic change that happened in a fairly short period of time, because a new kind of a mind became available and could be downloaded. And once you do that, you could see there were advantages in the sense that, well, you could start to create cities, and you would have all these intellectual advantages. You would create metals, which requires having distinctions in your mind, so to speak. But on the other hand, it really also made societies very much divided. But people were, it was almost like implanting like a slave mentality in people from this kind of a mind. I don't think we should be judging this really, or there's no point in judging it, but I think it's important to see that this is part of what shaped civilization, and really it's an undercurrent that has existed in our civilizations up until the present time, because they have been created by a specific kind of global mind that altered the consciousness of people about 5,000 years ago.
Well, let's jump ahead, because presumably we've moved on to the next wave of the long counter. We're in the beginning of it. Is this going to be more unity consciousness that occurred since 2011? Are we entering a new paradigm there?
Yeah, that's an absolutely critical question, I think. Well, the way, there are nine waves, and this wave, the long count, is the sixth of these waves. And they are all, the waves are just running in parallel endlessly, so to speak. But they have not all, they have been, since the beginning of the universe, since the birth of the universe, they have been sequentially activated. And so the sixth wave was activated then 5,100 years ago. And you might say that created the civilizational revolution. That's when civilizations, as we know them, with organized around cities and monarchies and all that kind of thing first arrived. But then another wave was activated in 1755, and that brings another kind of a mind, a mind with another kind of polarity into existence. And from that point on, we can talk about it brought the Industrial Revolution, and we can talk about like modern history, the American and the French revolutions changing systems of governance, no longer to be like monarchies and so forth.
Right, more democratic, yeah.
Yeah, and then in 1999 comes the eighth wave, and that brings the digital revolution. It's another mind change that brought this whole, the whole cyber world, the whole that we're in now. And then finally, at the top, the ninth wave was activated in 2011. And that is what does bring a sort of unity of mind back. But I should say, this is a wave, the wave with the highest frequency of all of these waves. Mm-hmm. And it's only been active for a very few years. And so we really haven't seen it manifest on a massive scale, so to speak. And what is happening at the current time is that all these waves, they are running in parallel. But there is a new situation, and it's something somewhat complex as to how these different waves are interacting with each other. Because we, since 2011, for the first time in human history, all nine waves are active and running in parallel. And what that means is that we can, they're accessible, and depending on what we develop resonance with, we will go into those different mindsets that the different waves are carrying. And, you know, I would say that it's a very small minority of humanity at the present time that have developed the kind of resonance with the unity consciousness. But they are there, and that's really what will, no matter what happens in elections and so forth, this is a wave that over time will sort of attract more and more people into a change of consciousness, a shift in the mind that gives us, those that download the ninth wave, a unity of mind. We, rather than projecting the duality that I talked about earlier, we're increasingly projecting unity. And as we do so, we will also change the world towards that direction. As inside, so outside is really a very important principle, I think, as to how humans work.
Now I have a question about relating this to astrology. It reminds us of, you know, we were probably about the same age when we were younger teenagers. The age of Aquarius was being projected. Yeah. Would you say the age of Aquarius relates to the what you just described on the long count, the new wave there?
The on the ninth wave, you mean the highest wave?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, the I suspect that what people described when they described the age of Aquarius was really what they some intuitive sense what I would say will be coming when the ninth wave has been influencing people a long enough time. I think so. I suppose that I'm not an expert in astrology, but I understand that there's quite a few different interpretations of what this age of Aquarius would amount to. I think many people would say that that would be an age of a mind of unity. And, you know, if any kind of, you know, the kind of changes that happened on our planet, they ultimately go back to these kind of cosmically created changes in the human mind. And this is what really accounts for a large-scale cosmic plan for the evolution of humanity, which is something that, you know, in ancient times, that's what they based prophecies on. And the whole idea in many religions that, you know, eventually there would be some return to some kind of a paradise. It must be based on the human beings changing themselves. But that change, I would say, can only be affected from the outside by these kind of waves that are altering our mind and are altering our inner selves, creating an inner revolution in such a way that it leads forward to us creating also unity relationships in the external world to others.
So one of the things that you said about the last change, not the one in 2000, around 2011, but the one that was 3000 BC, was that there was a geological download that took us from circular architecture and thinking more into perpendicular lines and squares.
Yes.
And that would be indicated by the building of the pyramids and changing of architecture during that time frame. You want to comment a little bit about that? And then also the next question is, do we have something similar happen now? Do we have a different geometric-based thinking that has been introduced maybe in the last few years?
Yeah, okay. to begin with, it seems that, you know, in when you go back to the Mayan sources, they actually have inscriptions in the temples in Palenque in southern Mexico that describe how they saw the beginning of this long count 5,100 years ago. And it really, what it boils down to, and what they're saying then, is that that the world became the first father, they said, which, you know, is God or something like someone like that, or just, mm-hmm. you know, the source of the universe, whatever however you want to perceive it, erected the world tree so that the light could enter. And it was made apparent, the eight house partitioning in the north. And so what that means, if you have studied Mayan cosmology, is that you know, their world with eight directions was downloaded to the planet. And so you might say that these eight directions were actually eight or four lines, like the four directions, and then complemented with what they call the Mecca direction, southwest, north, east, and so forth. So that the sort of a grid of was laid upon the entire planet, that a grid of straight and perpendicular lines. That's how they described the effect of this wave that was activated 5,100 years ago. And if we then consider that, you know, we are in resonance with this grid that was downloaded to the planet, and reproduce that in our own heads, and it becomes a mind in our mm-hmm. own heads, and a mind that's dominated exactly by straight and perpendicular lines, because that's what we're in resonance with. Then what happened was that once that happened, then people started to feel, oh, this is a new divine change going on. They started mm-hmm. to express that by building pyramids that were exactly, you know, the big pyramid at Giza in Egypt is actually eight-sided, which is what it's perfectly aligned with the North Pole. As you know, the error is like 3 seconds of an arc, or or something like that off the, it's just perfectly aligned. And this is exactly the kind of description that the Maya had, you know, an eight partitioning emanating from the north. And so it seems like what people did then when civilization emerged was that their minds were transformed and came to be dominated by these straight and perpendicular lines, and no longer would they build sort of huts that were amorphous or roundish or something like that. Instead, the houses began to have straight and perpendicular walls, and that's so prevalent everywhere around us in our civilization that we hardly even think about it. But there's really no reason that everything should be so, you know, so straight lines and every door and every wall. And if they're not strange people get upset and or caught off guard, so to speak. But it's just because our minds are still dominated by this particular geometry. That's really sacred geometry in a sense. Whenever they built a pyramid or something like that, that was like expressing a sacred geometry that they had downloaded, ultimately coming from the center of the universe, then to the earth, and as a grid across the earth, and then downloaded to their minds, and then people would start to express this in the outer world. So it's a very direct connection, I would say, between, on the one hand, the description that the Maya had for the beginning of this wave, and on the other hand, the kind of civilizations people started to create at that point in time, and the mediator is the global mind that we're all in resonance with. Coming back to the question, you know, how does that influence our own geometry? I wish I knew more about it at this particular time. What I find is that now we're only 5 years after the shift. When all the waves shifted, and things are chaotic because people are in resonance with the different waves.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, people that were somehow interested in the Mayan calendar before 2012 would think, you know, either that Hollywood promoted the idea that it would be the end of the world, even though there was nothing in the Mayan sources that talked
to
about
say that,
anything
right.
like that. Nothing. It was just a made-up story. But then there was also people that expected that there would be some kind of a mystical, spiritual boom where everything would automatically change for the better. And neither of those really were true. And in fact, people, depending on what they are in resonance with, they are in very different places in the world that we're in today. And I think this is very much what has played out in the in the American elections, but also for instance, in the Brexit vote in England half a year ago. Some people have that. Some people are really into a kind of a unity consciousness feeling happy and positive based on what they see in that. But then there's also a very large proportion of humanity that's very much still ingrained in that duality of the sixth wave, which creates separation by definition. So people are in different places, and I think that's very
right.
important. And that, but also to see that, you know, we have a choice. We'll have to work on, you know, what mm-hmm. is it that we want to create resonance with. And
yeah.
and it's not, since the all the, you know, it's like all the waves are now running in parallel.
Yeah.
And we can tune into them. We can choose, like, the channels of the radio or something like that. But
mm-hmm.
we're not forced to listen to any of these particular waves. But what my work is really partly about is that to let people know these waves exist. These the things we can choose what we
mm-hmm.
can tune into. But also to point out that, you know, I think unbeknownst to so many people, we are part of a plan that is
mm-hmm.
Is like a climb going up to the highest frequency of the pyramid, which is the
mm-hmm.
ninth wave. And in the end, that's to return to that kind of unity on a new level is really what the divine plan is has in store for us.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about what we're getting, which I think fits in with this.
Yeah.
In the next, probably the next 6 months, maybe 8 months, into May maybe, there's going to be a vast amount of revelation about things that were hidden.
Mm-hmm.
The previous wave allowed the, you know, the good versus evil, the duality to play out. You know, we have the dark part of the government that's controlling, that's been in battle with the light part of the government, and the dark part of the military in battle with the light part of the military. But what's happening is that astrologically, as well as with the long count, basically all of the things that were hidden are going to be revealed. That means all of the dirty dealings in the government, vast numbers of people are going to be outed for that, and justice will be served. Election fraud will be looked at, problems within the systems that we have, especially electronic systems, are going to come to light to show us where things have been manipulated, where maybe we thought they couldn't be. And essentially, after all this revelation, our systems will be able to be fixed. In other words, the dark part of each, the banking industry, the medical industry, I don't know if you've heard about all the murders of holistic doctors that came up with information about cancer. You know, all of this stuff has gotten very, very, very dark. But it's all going to be, you know, revealed and corrected, because I believe that the energy that this new, the current Mayan wave is bringing in is one of revelation of the truth, and then helping us fix the system so that the dark forces can't, you know, take over and manipulate everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's that is, it's almost in the nature of the ninth wave, because it doesn't have any filters, any dark filters. What is
right.
typical of the sixth wave that started 5,000 years ago is that it has a significant filter on actually one half of the mind, especially the right brain half. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That filter is sort of, it's something where you might say it allows for things to be hidden. Now, what the ninth wave brings is a mind that doesn't have any filters. So it is in the nature of that particular mind to allow for everything to be revealed. Without.
And also intuitively we'll know whether or not people are lying or telling the truth. You see? Intuitively,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's what the ninth wave brings. It brings
yeah.
the ability of discernment to everyone,
yeah. yeah.
which is critical, because if everybody could discern, the dark forces would have no power.
Yeah.
I mean, to a great extent,
yeah.
maybe not
yeah.
completely, but, you know, we
yeah.
just would be able to know if someone was telling the truth and not elect them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no,
well,
we're
coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Well, you know, my website is kalleman.com, kalleman.com. And I have a couple of Facebook pages as well, but it is on my web page where I publish my articles, sort of updating things that is going on in the world. So what we've been talking about is a fairly recently released book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. It was actually republished by Inner Traditions publishers in June of this year. But then in 2 weeks from now comes what I believe is the strongest book that I have written, which is called The Nine Waves of Creation. And it just presents everything in a more coherent way than I have ever done before. And it takes its beginning at the birth of the universe, which is now being viewed in a quite new way compared to, only 10 or 20 years ago. It's a new scientific view, really, that is emerging about the so-called Big Bang, where we can understand that it really is the structures we have in the universe and on our world today, they all go back to the emergence of like a cosmic axis or a tree of life, the center of the universe that came at that time. And then, you know, it goes on from there and brings us all to the trends and so forth that exist at our current time. And so that's in this book that is coming in 2 weeks from now, The Nine Ways of Creation.
Yeah, if you'll get us a copy of the book when it comes out, we'll get you on to talk about it. I think it'll be very interesting.
I'll do that. Yes.
That'd be great.
Wonderful.
Well, I mean,
wonderful.
And that's really some of the thing. I didn't go into that question, but I thought of the question about the structure that you were talking about in that book, you know, to look at everything, to look at the whole thing, which would be very interesting, So I look forward to that.
I'll do that.
So anyway, we've been interviewing Dr. Carl Kalleman on The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, and hopefully we'll have him back on for his new book, which looks at the entire timeline and what it means, which would be very interesting. Next week, we will be interviewing Michael Fitzhugh Bell, The Invisible Crime, and then Catherine Frombrevich, Eating to Beat Disease. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kalleman. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We'll see you back soon. This is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.